Where did he go? And she's like, oh, you didn't hear. I was like, hear what? Like, well, she goes, Garrett's going to be on HBO's first ever documentary style reality show. And this comes the day after, 2 days after they told me about Fake Famous being released. So I was like, oh my gosh, like I gotta watch the trailer. So I pull out my phone and I'm watching the trailer with her and I go, this is what he's gonna be on. This is my show. It was HBO's first ever documentary style reality show. I knew I was filming it already on my phone.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I'm your host, Hollywood Wade. Now, we have here today a very interesting story. You heard there in the opener a man basically realizing that his show idea was stolen by none other than HBO. That's right, Home Box Office Network, been around for years. Jack Pugey is a screenwriter, and we get into a detailed episode today where he basically says how, you know, he was pitching the idea for the show, everything was good to go, and then as soon as it got down to the brass tacks, next thing you know, his show was already being advertised on HBO as, you know, not his. Somebody basically stole his idea. This goes on a whole lot more than people realize. So a very interesting episode here with Jack Pugey. So get right into it here on Crime and Entertainment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. And these two words have never fit a guest more perfect than today because he's in the entertainment business, and well, there's been a by God crime, so we're going to get into it here today. Please welcome Jack Pugey. Jack, how are you, my friend?
Good, thanks. Thank you for having me. Thank you for taking the time out.
Oh, no problem at all. You've got a very interesting story. You know, I'd like to give a little synopsis in the beginning. Kind of tell us a little bit, just real quick, a little primer on who you are and why you're here, and then we'll kind of start from the beginning and work our way forward.
So, my name is Jack Pugey. I am, an independent producer, director, writer, creator. And I have a couple of shows that got stolen, through an intricate web of, illicit independent contractors who are out to deceive and have a system that's designed to deceive, to be able to steal from people like me and pass it up and along to networks.
Wow. And that's, I've heard stories of that, of people coming up with these ideas and reaching out to people and trying to get it off the ground. And then, you know, for whatever reason they say, okay, well that's denied. But the next thing you know, you see something on fucking TV that's your idea to begin with. And you're like, okay, that's just a little too shady right there. So
without a doubt, there was a movie called Big Fat Liar when I was a kid. It was Frankie Muniz and Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where he's sitting in the theater, and Amanda Bynes was his co-star, and she goes, what do you think? You want to see it? And he goes, see it. I think I wrote it. And I never in my life, that was always a moment when I watched that stuck. And I never in my life thought I would be doing that. And like, I could tell you where and when and what I was wearing and what I had for breakfast that day, you know, the first time I saw one of mine. So it is real. It happens endlessly. I mean, I've come across this happening with not only myself, but so many others. And like, you know, that's really what I'm fighting for. Right. It's like, I'm not fighting for me and like my work, long gone. And, you know, it took a while to get to this point, but what I'm fighting against, like, you know, for all the other creators that, like, we see now with the writer's strike, mm-hmm. out and about, you know, trying to like stop that. You know, there was one on Hollywood Reporter. I heard him say flat out, stop stealing from creators, you know, and like, it's just, it'll never happen unless it's like, it's shown and understood that like, this is how they're doing it.
Yeah. Awareness, situational awareness in this industry. And that's, you're spot on that it's not really highlighted enough. Yeah. And I mean, 50 Cent even says, I follow a lot of what he did, you know, since he got out of, not necessarily got out of the music business, but transferred more of his efforts into show business with Stars and the Power series and BMF. And, you know, a lot of interviews he said there is more cutthroat people in the business world than he ever met in the street world. And here's a guy that's been on both sides of the fence for, you know, for years. He was as deep as the drug game as you want to go. And now he's right in the middle of, you know, everything coming on TV from, I forgot that one prison show where the guy was in jail. That was on like regular network TV. I don't know if that was Fox or what it was, but obviously he's taken Stars to new levels with the whole Power series and BMF. So, you know, he said, you know, guys can come in there and rob you with a gun and a pen just as quick as they can, a briefcase and a pen just as quick as they can with a gun in the street. It's crazy.
I know. And you know, they make it look like they're just white collar guys, you know?
Yeah.
It's insane. I heard my mentor actually produced some series, or he worked with another producer or someone. The name's not coming to me, but I saw this documentary series they did where he said, you got to pick in this industry. It was like behind the scenes of hip hop sort of a show on, mm-hmm. I think it was VH1 or something. And they were talking about, you got to pick in this business, whether you want to play for the streets or for this in the entertainment industry, because one of them will take your life.
Yeah.
And you got, you know, but they operate exactly the same way. That's why it was a good outlet to get off the streets, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So tell us a little bit about, you know, you early life. Where'd you grow up? You know, how was early life? And did you always have a knack for writing? That's one thing that I always find curious when I have guests on. Obviously, we have them on for certain reasons, but I'm curious if those things, whether they're an actor or wrestler or whatever they may be, was that something that they kind of had a knack for at a young age?
Writing, I probably did. I was pretty successful in my creative writing classes. I could always garner a laugh, or I could create. I was captivating. I definitely knew how to like grab people's attention. I grew up going to, I went to a Latin school, which is a school that prepares kids to go to boarding school. And I never went to boarding school, but like they drilled humanities into us, you know, English, writing, all those sorts of history. They drilled it into us. So it's a lot of it probably came from, or a lot of it was probably molded there. Maybe it wouldn't have ever come to light, but like, I was writing 40-page papers at like, you know, 11 years old.
Jeez. Which, yeah. They kind of brought it out of you, whether you wanted to give it or not.
Whether I liked it or not. Yeah, it was beaten to me with a stick.
Now, where was this at? What area?
I'm in Long Island. I'm on the North Shore of Long Island.
Oh, okay. I go up Long Island quite a bit up there, Ronkonkoma, and I was just in Massapequa about a week ago for a little dinner, and we go up there. Yeah. It's so much fucking different, man, when going from the city to Long Island. It's just like night and day difference.
I couldn't take it. I don't know that I could be like, I mean, at this point in my life, I think it would help my dating life if I lived in a city, but outside of that, like to me, it's just like, there's no like trees, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like two different places. Cause when I would come in, I would stay in the city and then I would take the LIR down to Ronkonkoma and then get off that subway or the train. And I'm just like, this looks like I'm not even in the same vicinity of where I just was.
That's why you gotta live out here. You can't be, it's like institutional living.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure. So how did you, and that's not far. How far is that from Amityville?
Where I am?
Yeah.
Where you were, for Ronkonkoma.
No, from where you are.
Amityville's probably like half hour. Everything's like a half hour. Like I'm on the other, Long Island's like really long. So right. There's the South Shore and the North Shore. So I'm on this side. So anything that like, as you go down the island,
okay.
It's always like 20 minutes to do that. Plus like if you got to go east or west,
I always wanted to try to get down there and see the house, but I heard they really like changed it to where if you don't know exactly where it is, you wouldn't even recognize the house.
Horror house.
Yeah. I heard they changed the iconic windows that look like eyes that kind of made it real noticeable. Like, I heard they remodeled all that because they said people would just be coming by and just stopping and taking pictures and recording and shit.
I think they used to do a haunted house around Halloween time when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. That's fucking insane. All right. So you go into a Latin school. Your creative writing is coming out of you. What's next after that?
So, I mean, my journey into entertainment took a little bit of a different path. I had a family friend and mentor who I've mentioned before, but didn't stick his name in. His name is Corey Rooney. He is Jennifer Lopez's music producer. He wrote just about every song she ever had.
Wow.
And yeah, he worked with Michael Jackson. He worked with Mariah Carey. He worked with 50 Cent. He worked with... the list is so long, you can't count it on two hands.
But so if you Google, how did you meet this guy?
So I went to school with his daughter, and my mom and his wife really hit it off. And they were family friends. But, you know, my story I always tell is that at 5 years old, I played the piano, and he was like, "You play the piano. Why don't you come by?" And I used to think, like, this guy is such a creep. He wants to hang out with me. You know, and I've said it to his face before. So it's like, you know, it's funny. Now we laugh about it, but, he kept it up from like 5 years old until the time I got to high school. So, you know, 15, 16 years old, still telling me, "Hey, why don't you come by and we'll hang out?" And eventually I was like, you know, this guy kept it up for a while. I should take him up on it. And that's when our friendship and mentorship sort of like really blossomed. The first time I walked in, you know, I always thought I would enter this business through music, and I ended up this way. But I walked into his studio, and it's just lined floor to ceiling with platinum and gold records and, like, you know, and triple platinum on some of them. And his Grammys are on the shelves, and like, and you're like, where did I, what, like, I just thought I was in Long Island, you know. And we just would walk out to his pool house, and like all of a sudden it always became this it became this place that I was like, I belong somewhere, you know, that meeting all these other creators. I mean, he always said, he's like, you know, you're hanging out there with Bruno Mars, like before he was even Bruno Mars.
Wow. So I mean, and that's crazy how those chance meetings can turn into something like this. I mean, you think, had your mom not struck up a conversation with his wife, I mean, like, you know, where you may have ended up doing something totally different somewhere else. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. My whole life like pivoted on that. I know. It's wild.
And so like, it sounds like he's, you know, heavily involved in the music. I mean, did you go into more of the music?
Yeah, so, when did the entertainment? So he was heavily involved in music, but entertainment's entertainment, right? Right. Like if you want to be, he's a producer. So a producer can produce, whether it's film or music or whatever it may be, it's putting the parts together. And he actually had one of the first ever reality TV shows back in the day on the first ever reality show, I believe, was The Real World on MTV.
Yeah.
And the second was The Shop, which was about Mr. Rooney's barbershop in Jamaica, Queens, which was his show.
Oh, and okay.
He had all his friends come through, you know, I think the opening pilot he had Diddy come in. He showed up with Diddy and they were like hanging out on, and just like, he was like, look, you could, this is a sort of a show. You could just throw up a topic in the air and everybody can kind of like, it was almost like having a group podcast.
Right. You know, yeah. And they do that now. There is a show where guys and musicians and athletes will come and sit in barbershop chairs and they just record them and they just talk about, you know, whatever the hot topic is for that time. Yeah.
So he was like, he was the first guy to do that, you know, when there was only like the Hollywood way of going about it.
Right.
So, and at that point, so that was where my development kind of began was I ended up having a reality show concept that pitched it back to him. This one never matriculated. But he set me up with these friends and he was like, these are the guys to work with. Anytime you have a reality show, this is who you call.
What was the first one, if you don't mind me asking?
So this was Jesse Guma and Lowell Friedman of Grand Street Media. They are.
Well, like your first idea, your first, the one that you said.
My first idea. It was a reality show about, at the time I was working in finance with my dad, and Occupy Wall Street had been just kind of like all, like ending. And I couldn't figure out why they were petitioning outside of the New York Stock Exchange and not like up at Midtown outside of the hedge funds.
Right.
Because those are the guys who are really ruling the world from their ivory towers. The guys down on the floor are just like, you know, rats in the maze like everybody else, you know, and or in the trap rather. And so I was like, why don't we like open this up and show this, you know, that working on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange is no different than like, it was a little different, right? Cause we had, there was more regulation, around how you could be, cause it was a communal space. But like when you watch like the Wolf of Wall Street and you see these guys, up at like those boiler room operations, it was just a party all day.
Yeah.
And the floor was no different, but it was mostly men, and it was really more of a, it was like the frat house,
right,
with times 100, you know. So you had, I mean, they had some crazy antics, and that's what I brought them down there. I was like, look, guys, let me show you what this is about, and like we can do the same kind of thing. You can throw something out, and like it'll become a rumor across the floor really fast. And there's this guy yells every time the clock hits a certain thing. He's like a cuckoo clock at 3 o'clock, you know, and the whole thing. It was just, I was like, we got something, there's something here. And then it was like, show this dynamic of like a father and son operating a business. I thought was like, you know, the, like where we came into play and then how we could make his crew. And
yeah.
So that was that initial,
kind of like a spin, like a boiler room, early Wolf of Wall Street type, the early part of the movie anyway. Okay. Yeah, that could be cool.
So that was kind of like, I was trying to just snapshot into that. And like, you know, everybody had such unique personalities that there had to be a place for it.
Yeah. I always enjoyed the boiler room. I thought that was good with, I think Rhea BC, Affleck was in there. Vin Diesel, I even think was in there.
I never saw that one.
Really? You never seen that? Oh, shit. That's a good one, man. I think it's Scott Conn, James Conn's son. He's in there. It's really good. Yeah. I'd take a look at that one. I think they're set in New York, and I mean, yeah, it's really cool. So, I mean, I think that could have been a good, cause you know, some of those movies, like obviously, the first Wall Street with Douglas and Sheen was a hit. I don't know financially wise how good Wall Street 2 did, but I enjoyed it with, what's his name now? He's kind of went off the grid here lately. He was in all the fucking Transformer movies. His name's escaping me.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yes. He was in the part two. I forgot the full name.
Yeah, he was. Oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah. Did you watch that one?
Yeah, that one I saw. I liked Wolf Walsh. I liked Greed is Good, Gordon Gekko.
Yeah. Greed is Good. Yeah. So there's definitely a market there and a niche for people.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to find what everybody works. And I think anything involving money and people getting rich or people losing it all, those stories are captivating to audiences.
Without a doubt. And that was like, you know, that was one of those. That was one that never really came to be. We couldn't get location releases. I wouldn't have been able to film it the way I wanted and scrapped it. But it's still out there and now it's free for everyone to go make. So that was like the initial attempt. But the New York Stock Exchange was not going to let it happen. So we didn't really take it any further. I had a movie idea that's still in the can, so I won't tell you about it. But I went out to LA and tried to work with Corey on that one. And again, like we started to get started, but I realized he showed me how the process works. And I stayed out at his place for a couple of days and put it together. I probably should have stayed a little longer, but I stayed long enough to get everything I needed. Mm-hmm. And we then I came back and I worked through the script, never really heard from him. He kind of like started to the distance. And that's when during COVID, I had like a change of heart. I was like, there's no way I'm working in finance anymore. This is not for me. It's soul sucking. I didn't know I was going to go right into something else that was soul sucking, but I had this concept for, you know, my shows now. And, I think reality shows are boring. I think that like, you know, a lot of watching that drama is like watching paint dry.
Yeah.
And But people love it. People love the drama, and the way the drama works is like, it's basically you put yourself, you're subconsciously putting yourself in that dynamic and wondering how it is that you'd react.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not a huge reality TV star or watcher either. Like I don't, it's never been something that's grabbed me. I can't say that I've never watched any of them. Like I remember watching The Real World and stuff when it's first kind of, like you said, first experience to this. But you know, in a grand scheme of things, I watch them every once in a while. I've actually interviewed a guy that was on A&E in that show that they done, Inmate to Roommate, about how people, when they get out of jail and having to live with like regular people and the dynamics that that caused. And that was pretty funny. I had some weird shit in there. But I, in my mind, I'm always going like, all right, what's staged and what's real, as opposed to just actually watching the, you know, the show. What are they doing for theatrics?
Oh, without a doubt. The one, there was only one that I ever got into was Bam Margera.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one was funny. He had his two uncles.
Yeah. Well, all those Jackass guys, but I think like anything they do, you have to watch that. You know, that's going to be entertainment.
You can't look away. It's like, it's too funny. That was the only one that got me for sure. But, they never did anything for me. My thinking was, well, if they're dry like that, when I watch them, I want it to be appealing to someone like myself. So I had this concept to kind of almost have a show within a show. Mm-hmm. And I turned out this concept for what became Fake Famous and F-Boy Island. And I pitched them Married as One. And of course, for them to call it a parallel idea, which is like the defense they utilize, they separated them. Okay. So the way that these networks attempt to get around this sort of a structure they've created with their lawyers, you know, my story began as I pitched this thing, whatever, same sort of a thing. They loved it. Then they didn't want it. Then they passed me off to another guy.
Now, who is they? Who is that? Who are you pitching it to start with?
That same group, Grand Street.
Okay. So you're pitching it to Grand Street. And this was they were introduced to you by the other friend, by your mentor. Yeah. Okay.
So now I pitched to them. They loved it. They're coming back to me at the end of the week. Then they said, hey, our schedule doesn't fit with this, but let's work, you know, in their email. They said, work with our producer partner at Good For You Productions. At the time, it didn't click, but that name, GFY, is a double entendre, clicked in the middle when I realized they were robbing me.
Go fuck yourself.
They think that they're so clever with it, you know?
Go fuck yourself. Wow.
So I'm working with Go Fuck Yourself Productions. And I said to them, too, in like one of the meetings, this is how I really knew, because I hadn't realized yet that they robbed me, but I said to him, you know, it's pretty funny, the name of your company, GFY. Like, you know, that's what that means, right? And he's like, no, what does it mean? Like, dude, you're not even like playing it off well.
I bet he's fucking dying inside.
You know, he was dying on the inside because he couldn't smirk his way through it.
Wow. So the game is they pass you off to this GFY, their sub company partner, whatever.
Yeah, their production partner, right? Which makes you now understand that these guys work together as a unit, even though they're different companies. Mm-hmm. So as them working together as different companies, you know, there's a lot in a lot of my evidence. They talk about that. They talk about this, you know, hey, we spoke with Jesse and Lowell over the weekend, or we did this, or we did that. And, you know, Jesse and Lowell said to remind you of this, you know, so for them to act like everybody was succinct and like, you know, this is a lot of like what's already happening in the suit, mm-hmm. Which I'm giving you like an inside little look because nobody knows this yet, but
all right,
they're already trying to draw that differentiation.
Yeah.
And it's not the case. You know, you can be, if you have, and the reason it's not the case, and I know that it's not the case, is because my lawyer told me. So as I pitch these shows to the group, once I finally get through like pitching to the entire group, they dragged it out almost 3 weeks. And by that time, they were able to pump out a trailer. Well, now the time frame sounds crazy, right? That like you could pump out a trailer in 3 weeks, but it makes perfect sense if you have the whole concept.
Yeah, if you've got a concept and some ideas, and you know you can put some things in there, certain shots or cool shots that don't necessarily directly relate to the story, but just beef it up a little bit, the visual factor.
Just enough. And how much of that can be done from stock footage?
Yeah.
You know, that's what these guys were telling me in the development meetings. Oh, we don't need to film that. We can do stock footage. We can do this. And when I wasn't malleable and I was firm in how I wanted to do it, was kind of like their pushback was, well, just make it without them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I had to assume something.
Right.
So, you know, now what comes to be is I give my attorney a call and I'm like, hey, I'm ready to, you know, I had these guys sign your NDA and I'm ready to give them a contract so that we can continue to make this thing. Well, stop everything you're doing because they're not who they say they are. They're HBO and they stole your concept. I'm like, well, how is it that you're telling me that? Because I had already known he represented HBO. Like, how could you be telling me what your other client's working on?
Yeah.
That's a conflict of interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like, but your other client just ripped off one of your other clients. I'm like, let me keep this like in the back burner. This sounds like something's going on. Something's fishy here.
This is so cool. I mean, and you don't think HBO would be doing this, but technically
HBO
they
didn't
would.
Do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Technically, HBO didn't do it. GFY did it. You know? your lawsuits or whatever, they're going to be going after GFY, who's probably got pennies to their name, and that's how they get away with all this shit.
And that's how they do it, because the whole thing is, I'm going after a company who, basically, whatever they wanted to pay me is what that company was funded to be worth.
Right. Okay. All right.
So now, but then you got to link in Grand Street too now, right? Because that's probably like a little bit more of a bit parent, sort of a higher up on that food chain.
Yeah, they're getting their end for sure.
Yeah, those guys got paid without a doubt.
And then essentially too, I'm assuming if you create, and I don't know how the insides of these work, so this would be a good question to ask. So you created this concept. Did you go as so far as creating the characters and everything too, or did you just create concepts?
So I was to be one of the characters, and I had a group of friends that were supposed to be some of the characters.
Okay.
And they cast one of my friends to be one of the characters.
Oh, wow. So he actually didn't make it in there.
Wow. He didn't. Not only did he make it, but he won the show.
Wow.
So now he won the dating. So the point was, you know, these two separate shows, he wins the dating show. He goes through and through. And it was because, you know, he was one of the characters I based it on. Of course he was going to win it. All I had to do was put him in the environment.
Right.
And then when you put him in his cage, he was going to react the way he was going to react naturally. So
well, real quick, if this thing would have stuck, would you have owned it? Had it went down the way it was supposed to, would you have retained royalties? How does that work when you?
I would have retained, the way I was going about it was this business is all about the rights.
Right. Yeah. The rights. Yeah. That's what I was getting at.
I wanted to own all the rights because then I got to pick where it went, who saw it, who saw what. But the way that these guys wanted it to be was they wanted a part of the rights. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to give that up because I figured I was paying for that.
Right.
I was going to pay them cash to develop this whole thing.
Yeah.
No, because rights, everybody knows rights are more important. And I didn't know that had I aligned I learned after the fact, but I learned through, you know, the mistake of it. But like, had I learned that if I aligned our incentives, they probably wouldn't have ripped me off. They probably would have worked with me, but I didn't know who they were. You know, I thought they were just another for hire. Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess that's why they have this in place is like, they don't want it to matter who you are.
And so now, like, just say you win this suit, like if they do the GFY and they pay you whatever your, you know, negotiations were, but HBO still has this, their idea, they have those rights. So essentially even though they might've paid you what you want, they're getting all the rights and they fucked you out of the rights to the show.
That'll all come down to like the negotiation. Okay. Table, without a doubt. Cause this, I want my credit.
Fuck yeah.
You know, the whole point was I even offered these guys, they could have avoided court. They could have avoided all of it. I said to them, I will keep writing it for free if you put my name on it.
And still no.
We don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Plausible deniability.
They got to stick to their alibi, yeah. You know?
So when he tells you that, your first thought is, I mean, what is going through your mind? Obviously, you know, you're trying to piece this together that your lawyer is representing you and HBO. What's next?
At that moment, I was like, you know what? I had enough of this guy. I think that like he's doing something weird, but he sounds paranoid. That was really what I thought. I was like, he just sounds like maybe he's a little paranoid and maybe he's like a little crazy. Let me find somebody else. So I hit up another lawyer that I knew. And 2 weeks into this thing, GFY is telling me about how my show is now on HBO. And we're not really sure. Is it your show? Is it not your show? And I'm like, I'm not going to watch somebody else's show that's like mine. I mean, I really didn't realize. I was like, I don't want to be influenced by somebody else's idea. Right. Meanwhile, I wouldn't have been. It was my concept I was going to watch.
So you had no interest in even looking at it.
Yeah, I told them. I mean, I have this. So one portion of my show was that it was going to be a documentary. So I was going to document every single step from development to like, you know, I was even going to have a camera there filming when like the thing first aired. You know, like I wanted to, the whole thing was going to have like a secondary behind the scenes feel.
Right.
And I wanted to, because then I had double the content for free. So in having that behind the scenes camera, I was recording all these development meetings. So I have these calls recorded with my lawyer. I have these calls recorded with GFY. I mean, they recorded one of them too. So like, you know, there's a lot of, there's 20 hours of foot, over 20 hours of footage here.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good. So when did it really finally start to click? And I mean, I don't want to skip over anything, but through this process,
it clicked when I was, after they pitched me that it was my, after they told me I should go watch. So it took three things for me to realize. I realized for sure my guard was up early on. It was up when I went to go visit, when I went to their studio for the first time.
This is GFY?
Yeah, somebody I knew personally told me, I don't know who had been to that location. The guy who was driving me up there said, I've been here before. I don't know who brought you here. I was like, it's fine. It's a family friend. I didn't, you know,
yeah.
So I didn't realize I was going to get screwed by somebody I loved and I trusted. But that's where it normally comes from, right? So yeah. It clicked after like a few steps and you know, one being the lawyer telling me, the next thing, these guys telling me the show's on HBO, the guy dropping me off telling me this place is sketchy. And then I called GFY one morning and I told them, hey, I'm down here with my friend Garrett. We're here for his birthday. He's got to be one of the cast. And there's a group of others here. And that I met last night. And like, you know, all together we got some of the crew here. 2 hours later, they call my friend Garrett and cast him to be on F-Boy Island while I'm there with him. And his girlfriend goes, well, we're walking around in the pool. It was him, myself, and his girlfriend. Everybody else was hungover from the night before or wherever they were. And like, we're just like kind of, we went to go lounge at the pool. And I go, where did he? And the pool was packed. There was nowhere to sit. And he just kind of disappeared. It was only me and her. And I was like, where did he go? And she's like, oh, you didn't hear. I was like, hear what? Like, well, she goes, Garrett's going to be on HBO's first ever documentary style reality show. And this comes the day after, 2 days after they told me about Fake Famous being released. So I was like, oh my gosh, like I got to watch the trailer. So I pull out my phone and I'm watching the trailer with her and I go, this is what he's going to be on. This is my show. It was HBO's first ever documentary style reality show. I knew I was filming it already on my phone. And
you're there filming it is why they're doing it.
So now I became there filming it. So I'm like, at that moment, I was like, I am going to be so rich. These guys signed NDAs. I got them. And that's when when it all came crumbling down. And then I realized, like, I didn't really have them quite yet.
Yeah. You've got a portion of them, but not.
I had a portion of it. And that's when I started playing defense. So, like, everybody doesn't realize, but, you know, they must now that I filed this thing in court. From February, I think that was February 5th or 6th on, I was playing defense.
So and this I was. What year is this?
This is 2021.
2021. Okay.
So we have, you know, there's another 18 hours ish after that, that I'm on the defense playing, you know, pulling information. So I'd sit through these 2 hour meetings with GFY that were always supposed to be 30 minutes. I'd tire them out. They'd get sick of listening to me. And then I would lay in the little zingers and I'd extract what I needed for the sake of my evidence. And they'd always give it to me, which was like the ironic part. I was like, you guys realize you're incriminating yourselves at some point. Like, you know, and then there was another time where I like held, I don't even want to get into that. there's so much evidence and like, it's going to come out, you know? So, I got to save some of it in my pocket.
Yeah. So no, I understand that, especially if it's, this is all, I'm assuming, still in litigation.
Pending litigation. Yeah. So that was like the big thing for me. And that was when I called my other attorney up and I was like, hey, by the way, my attorney's in on this because he's the one who told me HBO was robbing me. And he's like, come on. Like he was like, he's like, well, then record him too. You know, keep recording. So I called up that attorney and I recorded that attorney. And I pinned them on a call too, between a rock and a hard place. It's like, so you mean to tell me that you represent them and me on this show? And the pauses are like so dramatic. I mean, like you couldn't, it was just life, but the pauses were so dramatic. I was like, if I was directing this, it couldn't be better.
Yeah. There almost needs to be a show about this. Like
that's my goal.
Yeah. I can see this, like as you're telling me these things, I can picture this scene by the pool of you saying that you're a friend telling you their friend went and got casted and a sure idea and you're watching it and it's like that. And then what's playing in your head. I can see that whole scene playing out right now.
That's okay. I told you, I was like, see it. I think I wrote it.
Yeah. See it. Fucking, this is mine. I'm filming it right now.
Oh my gosh. It was like, you know, so that was like the really like juicy tidbits of this thing that were like just, you know, out of body experiences sort of where I was like, wow, like there's definitely, I mean, my faith exploded through all of this.
Yeah.
There was no way that I didn't have Jesus guiding me.
Yeah.
Because nobody has a documentary camera rolling in the background to keep the evidence.
Yeah. You just happen to have this idea of, okay, well, I might as well record this while I'm doing it. That's a whole separate show that you can use. And wow. Yeah, that is
without a doubt from Jesus.
Yeah. Great, great break you caught there for sure. Cause without that, I mean, a lot of this stuff could be written off as hearsay or, you know,
and that's what so many of these people fall into, yeah. You know, and who people in my situation and, that's what I'm fighting against. Like, and that's what, like, you know, while my name may be the name in the headlines and the articles you read right now, like I'm not fighting for me. I'm fighting against a system of injustice that's created to steal from how many thousands of people before me. I mean, I've heard, as I'm going through this process, I've heard so many stories of friends and people I knew in life that had, I mean, I even had a friend who had an episode of The Sopranos stolen from him.
Whoa.
A total ironic circle for this thing to take.
He had an episode. Which episode was it?
Muscles and Marinara. Muscles. It was he went to audition for the episode and he was like, hey, I wrote one too. And he just handed it over to the casting agent and never got a call back.
Would that have been George Ann Walken?
His name's Peter.
Oh, okay.
And they used Peter's been acting for a long time and he was on the opener of my favorite one to tell people is he was in the, oh my gosh, what's the name of the movie with Pelosio? Oh my gosh, what's the
name? Oh, you're talking about Bronx Tale. Yeah, yeah.
One of the opening scenes is Peter is like young, super young.
Oh, you're talking about the fight. He's fucking huge, right? Real Jack Peter Savario, yeah. Or I think's his name, or last Savino.
Guardio.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, he's fucking huge.
We worked out. He was my trainer for a while. We worked out together. He was a friend of my dad's.
Oh, okay. He's doing Gravesend right now, too.
Yeah. Ed DeMeo. Yeah, he is. Oh, that's crazy. Small world.
Yeah.
he's doing, I love it. I think Gravesend is going to be huge. It should be huge.
Yeah. They're getting a lot of top-notch people in there, man. They had, Amada Santi, I think, is involved.
Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like all those New York guys just like coming together to kind of.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, that's who it is.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, it's funny. It's like I was talking to somebody the other day about Trump, and they were like, that's what it is. People didn't get him because he was a New York guy.
Yeah. And I, you know, I mean, I fucking love Sopranos. I love Trump. Right up my alley, man. And that's, you know, when you talk about Sopranos, it's funny you mentioned that. So, you know, obviously, I was never a big Game of Thrones fan. But Sopranos, I was really into. The Wire, I really loved. You think about all these landmark shows that HBO's done, you never think that behind the scenes that some of this shit would be going on. Like, that they would just have the cash to be able to pay somebody to bring these ideas and do it the right way. But even these big multi-billion dollar conglomerates, you know, still figure out ways to fuck people.
Yeah, oligopoly. And it's because, you know, the media runs by its own rules.
Yeah.
Because they play by rules of the streets, you know, because really, if I wanted to go after this, like in a different way, there was other ways to go about it. But I thought that this was most ethical.
Well, and there was something you said, too, like when you started looking into this of how many more cases that you find. And that's something that, you know, it happened with me personally in a situation to where when I started looking into something that I was currently involved in. You don't realize how much it happens and how often it happens, because until it happens to you, you're not really digging for that information, you know, but when it does, and then you start, holy shit, it happened to this person and this, but you realize how common it is. So I know exactly what you mean. Like, you're trying, obviously you want credit for what you did. You want, you know, your accomplishments to be recognized because that was your baby, your brainchild, but at the same time, bring awareness to others that might not have recorded a lot of the processes that you did, which would have made it damn near impossible to try to bring a suit.
And you wouldn't have been able to do what I was doing if you didn't have a global pandemic.
Yeah.
Because everyone forgot the camera was rolling, except for me.
All the time. The cameras was always rolling all the time.
Always rolling. You know, so now, you know, it's like, well, what did I say? What did I not say?
So the lawyer that you have now is he giving you pretty good hope on this with all that? I mean, it sounds like you have a strong case, but at the same time, you're dealing, like we said, with this huge conglomerate company who's, they try to bury you in litigation. They try to push it off as much as they can.
They're gonna try and bury me. They're gonna try and run me out of money. But you know, they listen. A company of that size that's created a structure like this to steal from people. I mean, they're steps ahead. They've been steps ahead for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, but they stopped looking at that structure probably.
Yeah,
because it works.
Yeah. And so, I mean, was that your mentor? Right.
Laws rewritten, and you know, but my lawyers sued the Yankees and won. So,
damn, that's right up there with the mob and people that run New York.
So that's, you know, like, Yankees. Listen, you can never be confident going to court. Everybody's got a pit in their stomach, and nobody wants to go to court, right? But it's not whether I win or lose. I'm trying to do this because I have the ability. I have everything I need. And like, hopefully I can change the system.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, if I can come forward
and be, the first sort of RICO style case against the entertainment business.
Yes. And that would be landmark, man. 'Cause that's not been done before. That would be cutting edge for the time. And we all know this happens. I mean, there was a show, and apparently they patched things up, but did you ever watch Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So Chuck Zito, he's from New York. You know who Chuck Zito is? Okay. So supposedly Zito had the idea of Sons of Anarchy first. He pitched it and it, I guess, got balked at, but then Kurt Sutter comes along, FX and him team up, they make it, it goes on to do 7 seasons, smash show. I mean, right now they got a spinoff going, the Mayans. I think it's on their last season. There's talks of somewhat of a prequel. So made a ton of money, and I know Zito had a lawsuit against him. Now, he was later actually in the show, I think around the 5th season. So obviously he patched something up or else he wouldn't have went on the fucking show. But like, how would that work? So I go in this studio, just say I go in this FX or whatever. We'll just use them since that's the basis of this. Say, okay, I got this idea about, you know, whatever, lawyers that are actually serial killers. They go out and kill people, frame people to get put in for it. And then they defend them and get them off because they know how they done it. Just something off the wall, wild and crazy. And they're like, you know, I don't really know if that works for us. And so they give me the boot. Well, then next thing I know, that same fucking premises is on there with Jack Pugie running the show. Yeah. How do you go about that? Is that wrong? I know it's wrong, but I'm like, how do they, is there loopholes?
Their defense is this. Their defense is, well, it's perfectly legal for two people to have the same exact idea at the same exact time. Mm-hmm. Because it is, right?
Yeah.
How do you know what my brain chemistry is right at the moment?
Yeah.
How do you know I didn't have that one in the wheelhouse?
Yeah.
So this is the game they play.
Like, I just come up with that idea for that show off my head. Now I'm sitting there listening about it. It actually seems like it might be a pretty decent one. Like the lawyers killing people and framing people to set them up.
I kind of liked it. It reminded me of who was the guy in Miami? There was the one about the guy in Miami.
Dexter?
Dexter.
Yeah. Kind of like a Dexter. Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, I mean, I've always thought that to be quite crazy because you can change, and two, you can change one thing. You can change one thing about it.
And then you, as long as 90% of it's 90% of it can be the same and 10% of it could not be. And now it's not yours anymore, that just shows that there's a problem in the way the rules are written.
Right.
But again, like, who's writing those rules? The Warner Brothers, who grosses $30 billion a year, or Jack Pugie?
Yeah. You're at their mercy.
So now it's David versus Goliath. But what I always like to use is that my iPhone and a tripod is my slingshot.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's going on. So where are you at as far as, like, obviously, you know, we've talked of how they can push stuff off and, you know, negate going to court for as long as possible. But I mean, if his lawyer giving you any kind of insight of when this could be going to trial or.
It's, you know, follows the process of the judicial system. So,
oh, trust me, I know all the wheels of the judicial system. If they move at all, it's very fucking slowly.
Yeah. So it's a little, you know, then that's what it'll be. But FBoy Island's going into season 3. And I guess, like, I should be taking the Chappelle adage at the moment because Chappelle had people boycott his show.
Yeah.
And it stopped and he won. He made $50 million because of it. So. Boycott me.
boycott him.
His line.
Has this whole experience deterred you at all from wanting to continue to write and create, or has it fueled your fire? I always find that to be a good question because certain things can keep you just be like, man, fuck this, or it can be like, all right, I'll come back with something better. Where are you sitting right now?
A wonderful question. And I really don't know the answer for sure, but I know that whatever I do, I don't want people like that in my corner.
Exactly. You
know? So, like, I think that I have a friend who was telling me last night, life's what you make it. And it's all about who you surround yourself with. And if you surround yourself with people who are genuinely happy, you'll have more of that, like, genuine happiness. And he said, everybody knows when you talk to somebody up front inherently, whether or not they're a happy person. You know, and you get that gut feeling. You can't explain it. But when I met you, like, you know, I could tell you had it, you know, yeah. But I don't know why. I don't know how. It's just, that's what we have that. And we have that ability.
Yeah. I think too, since I've got into this, because I've only been doing podcasting just for a couple of years, but a little over two. And I had no experience in any of this when I first started. I've been a welder most of my life. I was like, all right, what can I do the least amount of work in and make the most amount of money in high school? And they was like, well, welders do pretty good. And they're not, you know, they didn't really go into detail of how much work it actually is, but they just said they do pretty good. And so that's what I've done really the most of my life. And, you know, I had a situation happen in my life around 2018, and through the pandemic, I never even listened to podcasts. And I started listening to podcasts, and, you know, that true started with true crime, and then that kind of rabbit hole into other stuff. And I'm like, you know, I think I'm going to do this. And I guess, you know, most of the population had the same idea at that time that they were going to start a true crime podcast, but I stuck with it and I tweaked it. I changed it a little bit, you know, from the norm, crime and entertainment. Then that allowed me to interview anybody, you know, singers, actors, wrestlers, porn stars. I mean, you fucking name it, scientists, writers. I mean, all across the board, people, anybody with interesting stories. And you could, like you said, you can tell when you hop on, if somebody has that creative mind, that creative personality, somebody you're going to vibe with really quick. And it's just, I don't know. I guess you could call it an instinct, but you know, like I said, I picked up the same thing with you.
You can pick it up. I don't know where you feel it, but you feel it, you know? We don't know where feelings come. I mean, that's another thing for me, like where my faith becomes super important, because how do you not have that if there's not Jesus?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
But as a welder, I got an old Bronco frame that I keep trying to figure out. Well, I got this like plan for. I can't.
Well, next time I come down there, I can tighten it up for you.
I have this frame and I want to do, I saw Jay Leno did it. So he used like, they rebuilt the whole frame. And they chopped out the bottom center. They chopped out the bottom and they like put a new C channel in it. And then they used the top channel. So when they re-registered it with a DMV, it's still registered as like a 68 Chevy or whatever it was.
Oh, wow.
Everyone keeps telling me the thing's going to warp on me. I'm like, I don't know. I think you just need to talk to the right welder.
Yeah. I mean, you can put enough support center. I don't think it'll warp. But that's a really cool way to get around cheaper insurance.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even for that. I just want to be able to register it as an original Bronco.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just for, well, yeah, I guess that would work out better for you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you pop it off and you look at it, you're like, oh, wow, that's the original frame.
Wow. Well, Leno's got that money. He can do really whatever the fuck he wants.
You do whatever you want. And I hear you. You're going to figure that part out still.
So, I mean, so what's right now? I mean, what's your plans for the, you know, immediate future? I mean, what do you got? You got anything cooking? You got anything working?
Right now? Yeah, I definitely got, you know, I'm the next free agent in this industry, and I got about a dozen in the wheelhouse and that I've been quietly creating in my Rolodex, like, you know, in the pipe waiting, you know, but I want to feel really comfortable with whoever I'm working with next. Right. You know, I want to, I got to figure out how and who, you know, but to anybody listening who wants to pass me up the pipes, you know, like I'm here and I will not work with anybody that is not 110% honest. And you can tell that through and through, okay. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's a rarity in this world, unfortunately. But I mean, there's so much, there's so many great stories out there, man, that really need to be told that, you know, since doing this podcast, it's like almost, I ain't gonna say every person that I've done story needs to be a movie, but there's a lot of them that you would think, God, this would make a really crazy fucking movie. And one that comes to mind, and you may know who I'm talking about since it's from the New York area up there. Did you ever watch that documentary, The 7-5?
Yeah.
Okay, so when we get off, if you've got a couple of hours free, go Google The 7-5. It is the best documentary I've ever fucking seen in my life, and I've watched a shitload of them. And it's about a crew of dirty cops from the 7-5 precinct, and one of them's name is Michael Dowd. If Michael Dowd's story isn't a movie in the next couple of years, I don't understand what Hollywood is doing. It was a great success as far as the documentary goes. Supposedly, last time I talked to him, somebody had a pretty prominent actor in Hollywood had the rights, his life rights that he bought, but he hasn't done anything with it. And I want to say he said, April, if nothing was done, then obviously the rights go back to him and then he can sell them again. And that's what a lot of times people don't know too. Those life rights, when somebody options their life rights, it's usually on a 6-month scale, 1-month scale, 3-year scale. It doesn't go, that's not permanent. So if nobody does anything with them in that time, then they get those back and they can sell it. I know somebody said they sold their life rights like 5 times and still nothing's been done with them. But dude, I'm telling you, the stuff that they did as cops, they were basically muscle for hire for high-end drug dealers in the New York area. I mean, just the stuff that they were saying there was just crazy. It was a whole team. It was a whole team. It was pretty much a loosely version of The Shield. I don't know if you ever watched that from back in the day, the cop show on FX. That was actually Kurt Sutter's. He wrote all those. And that's kind of what parlayed him into Sons of Anarchy, because a lot of the guys from The Shield went on to star in Sons of Anarchy. But if that guy's movie or life doesn't become a movie, I don't know what Hollywood's doing, because it seems like even if you watch the Academy Awards, everything is reboots or remakes or sequels. We can't get any originality here, and I don't understand what's the problem.
I think what we're really seeing, especially with the writer's strike now, is Hollywood's going to crash and burn.
Yes, it is. If they don't get that strike,
YouTube's the new version of cable, and we all work from Google. You know?
Yeah. No, I believe that's you said it, man. That's it. Which is good for guys like me. I'm happy for that.
Oh, of course, it's great. And then the premiere version of that, like if you want to become, you know, I think that then the movie producer makes it to Netflix, you know, or he makes it to like Prime, or you know, Prime doesn't have the sex appeal yet.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there, but it's coming close.
It's chugging along a little slower, but listen, when you really think about what's going on in the world, whoever has the most money is ruling, you know? So if you don't think it's going to be a combination of Bezos and Musk and, you know, Soros and all these other figures, like, come on.
Yeah.
Bill Gates, I mean.
Yeah, they're going to be running the land. And I had a friend of mine in Florida. His name's Ciro DiPaggio. So shout out to Ciro. He just done a independent film out of Florida called The Mob King. And it got picked up by a group called Adler and Associates. And they just had a premiere. I was just down there at the premiere this past week at the Hard Rock Hotel, the Guitar Hotel in Hollywood, Florida. And they just went like wide Friday. And I mean, they're on everything. You know, Amazon.
All the wild, right?
Oh, man, it was awesome. I'd never been there before.
I've only seen it from the outside, but it looks crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, it's constantly like lit up. I was sitting there like eating dinner or breakfast at that point. It was like 3 a.m. and I'm looking out of the window and I'm like, damn, is that storming out there? I thought it was lightning, but it like never stopped. And I'm just like, is it storming? Like, what is that? But it was the lights from the hotel. They just kind of constantly flicker up and down. And from where I was sitting, it just looked like lightning out of a window. But yeah, it was sick, man. It was crazy.
Like, looks really,
yeah,
cool.
really fun time.
The dirty cop line you were saying too is reminding me of, I don't know if you know New York well, but you'll notice next time you're in the city, there's a sticker on the back of the police cars that there's a $10,000 reward for pop shot, and that came from your friend the Chin.
Wow,
he implemented that.
Yeah. Yeah, I met his daughter. I've met his daughter a couple times recently when I was down there. Chin was something. That mob stuff in New York, man, is crazy. Just the stories alone, just in that one genre, you could make a bajillion things off of. I mean,
listen, The Godfather is like the movie of all time. So,
and those guys on from that life, you know, on YouTube, Sammy the Bull, Michael Francis. I mean, they're shows are just blowing up. People love to hear that kind of stuff. People love to be able to live vicariously through those stories of, you know, how people done stuff back in the day. And obviously, you know, nowadays with the advent of social media and cell phones and satellites, you know, a lot of that stuff you can't get away with now. So that was the heyday back then when you could get away with a lot of that stuff.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, listen, me and my friends grew up like loving The Sopranos. You know, I was the only Italian kid in my school, so I was like to them. Thought, are you connected? You know, I'm like, no, my dad works for the bank, so he's as much of a slave as you. But
I feel so blessed, man. I've been able to interview a couple people from off there. Like I actually interviewed Calogero from The Bronx Tale. He was my first interview ever.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, my very first interview. Vito, the guy that wound up being gay towards the end of the season and they killed him.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah, that was who was at the dinner I was telling you about.
John
Fiore, the one that died. He was like the only guy that died from not getting killed. He died taking a shit. He had a heart attack.
Yeah. That's a great.
And he was, he's like, he said, when Chase called me and was like, all right, you know, we're not going to extend you for next season. Unfortunately, you're going to go. And he's like, you know, was trying to convince him. He's like, man, just let me stay on. Let me do this. Let me do that. And then finally he was like, all right. He's like, well, if I got to go, he's like, just, you know, let me know how it's going. You know, I want to, I'm going to make this fucking death memorable. And he's like, I didn't really have the opportunity to make it memorable through my acting. He said, but it was memorable. All right. He was like, really? I got to go out on the shitter, like of all things in a mafia TV show. I'm going to die on the shitter.
That was genius. Yeah. It was.
Yeah. So to hear all those stories, man, from those guys filming that and, you know, how some of the crew was. Robert Fornaro, who played Eugene, the guy that hung himself. I interviewed him. Dan Grimaldi, who was the guy that wore the glasses. He made it through the whole thing. You know, I've been really blessed. And that's probably my hands down my most favorite TV show of all time.
Oh, come on. It's the best. It's one of the best. Yeah. It's definitely one of the best.
Well, Jack, I appreciate it, man. Look, I hope this episode really kind of helps people, you know, understand if you're going to be in this business, in this industry, doing anything similar to what you're doing, make sure you vet, you know, who you're talking to. I understand people think that the more they can get their stuff out there, you know, the better it is. And in some cases, that's true. You know, like I think you and Matt spoke on y'all's interview about Andrew Tate. You know, next thing I had never heard of Andrew Tate, and then he's fucking everywhere. But he wasn't selling a script. He was selling himself. So in that case, that works. But when you've got something like a script that you're writing, you can't just hand that thing to any and everybody you see, much like your friend that said to hand it to someone in The Sopranos, because it's nothing for somebody to just type out that name, put their own name, and then change a few things, 10% of it, and then that's theirs. So
what is 10% of it? You change the names?
Yeah.
You know, like they did with me.
Change the names, change a few details, make this man a woman or whatever, you know, just change some of the genders around and, you know, there you go. I mean, that's it. So just, I hope it brings awareness to people in this business and we wish you best of luck on this suit going forward. You know, obviously we don't know how long it'll take, but whenever we do get some resolution, anything that you're able to speak about, I've got all ideas, whatever happens will be an NDA. That's what
I'll be back. if it is, That's not what I would like to do. So,
right. Yeah. So definitely I'd love to have you back on and kind of give us a resolution to this, but, definitely keep in touch, man. We wish you all the best going forward. I'm sure you'll probably get something cooking here before too long. And, we look forward to seeing what you're bringing to us in the future.
That's the goal. Thank you.
All right, my friend. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Hollywood Wade. That was Jack Pugin. And unfortunately we are out of time. Jack, we'll see you later on, my friend.
You too. Thanks.
Oh boy, what an episode that was. We hope everybody enjoyed it. We hope everybody's enjoying all the content. If you are, please let us know in the comments. Please like, subscribe, hit that notification bell on the YouTube side. Leave us a comment there. We'll get back to you on all the audio platforms, Google, Stitcher, all the good stuff. Apple Music, of course. I'm not an Apple guy, but shout out to all you Apple people. Give us some comments on there, some likes, some reviews, purple hearts, all the good stuff. Drive us up the charts. We certainly appreciate it. And of course, on the social medias, Instagram, Crime the Letter N and Entertainment, on TikTok, Crime and Entertainment, and Facebook, Crime the And Symbol and Entertainment. That will do it for this week's episode. We hope everybody enjoyed this episode with Jack Pugin. I'm Hollywood Wade. We'll see you next week on Crime and Entertainment.